Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line. Joining us now, Mike Stanton, Astros TV analyst, longtime big leaguer as well, one of the best lefty relievers of all time. Joining us on the HR&P guest line. Mike, thanks so much for coming on. What do you make of Major League Baseball locking out its players?
Well, I personally, I know we're it's semantics here. I don't like the idea of calling it a lockout because there's so much negative connotations when coming with that, because they're really not locking anybody out of anything, you know, because there's no games going on. You're not in spring training. You know, this is really more just a signing freeze, but it was kind of inevitable. You know, I know I'm usually optimistic in these situations because, you know, I want everybody to get along. I want the sport to thrive, and I think it still will. But with a, with a December 1st deadline, there's just no urgency. You know, there's no deadline. I mean, a real deadline to push this thing forward. So I think a lot of people were hoping that this time wasn't going to come, but I felt like it was kind of inevitable.
Mike, you mentioned hope. It's a season of hope. It's the season of giving. Are the Astros and Carlos Correa going to feel that hope vibe and find the season of giving to give a little on either side? And do you see this as a happy ending for Carlos Correa, or is he going to be playing elsewhere next year?
Well, you know, with this signing freeze that's going on, I really don't predict that this is going to happen anytime soon. You know, again, I think that's a little bit of a pipe dream. But I think with the action that we've seen in Major League Baseball with all the other shortstops, you know, everyone that comes off the board that the Astros haven't signed, I think it comes that much closer to the Astros being able to sign Carlos. And you know, I felt like, you know, the Astros made a valid offer when, early. But you knew that, you know, the years were a little short. AAV was okay, but the years were a little bit short. But I think that could be used as a starting point. I just don't know when they're going to be able to get back to possible negotiations.
And I get all that, Mike. The reason why I ask is I've said all along the X factor, and I know James Click is obviously an analytics and a numbers guy, but it seems like the same way when you've got an owner like Jim Crane. I said he's the X factor. He got Verlander done, they're buddies. But I could see him saying, look, for what Correa has meant to this franchise, it means something to me too. And regardless of what the numbers say, if I get involved, I can save the day.
You know, I don't think there's any doubt that you look at Correa and you know that Correa is a solid, a very, very good Major League Baseball player. He's going to be worth whatever somebody's willing to pay him. Now, we've seen in the last week, you know, I was on the radio last night on MLB Network Radio, and we were talking about the last 4 or 5 days maybe being the best off-season period of time of any time since free agency has started. I mean, we saw some huge numbers being thrown around. We saw some big, big years thrown around. I don't know if that's going to be the same situation when we get the new CBA. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why it was pushed forward so much over the last two weeks, was just simply because you don't know what the rules are going to be. And, especially if this gets closer to spring training, if it gets into January, gets into possibly even February, and I hope that's not the case. But now it becomes more of a buyer's market because players are going to want to know who they're playing with, where they're going, where they're going for spring training. There's going to be pressure to sign. And when that's the situation, you know, we've seen this over the last several years in free agency. When you get past the new year, prices started coming down. And you know, I think that's by design by Major League Baseball. You know, this is going to be a different situation because you're going to have the short time frame as far as the calendar is concerned, but you're also going to have the time frame in which to spring training. So it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult to see. It's actually impossible to see what's going to go on now until we actually get the rules that they're actually going to be able to start the business side of baseball back up after the CBA.
Astros TV analyst Mike Stanton joining us on the HRNP guest line. Over 1,100 innings pitched over the course of his career. You know, speaking of Correa, still out on the open market, another shortstop that's out there is Trevor Story. Some folks, we had Buster Olney on the station yesterday, he links the Astros to Trevor Story. I'm of the opinion the Astros don't spend big money on a shortstop unless it's Carlos Correa. Could they give a nine-figure offer to someone like Trevor Story?
Oh, man. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, you know, Trevor Story is another very good baseball player. You know, I think the numbers that he's put up, there's always going to be the question mark because he played in Colorado. You know, what is he going to do? He doesn't have that thin air of Denver to hit in. You know, do I think he's still going to hit? Yeah, I do. He's a solid defensive player. He's had some health issues, as has Correa. He is a little bit older than Correa. So, you know, I think if I were in the war room and I was looking at the depth chart, Correa is definitely at the top of the list, especially with the players that are still there. But, you know, you can't put all your eggs in one basket because in order for somebody to sign a player, you know, you have to agree on both sides. So they may negotiate with both at the same time with the idea of, you know, whoever blinks first or if Correa's numbers get, you know, higher than you want to pay, now all of a sudden you have a backup plan. But you always have to have a contingency plan. You can't put all your eggs in one basket because you're going to get caught in a situation that you have a really good baseball team, and then you're going to have to put somebody at shortstop on a daily basis that maybe you don't want to.
And before we get to that, Mike, because of your knowledge of the game and the pitching staff and seeing what the Astros had with all their starters a year ago, everybody focused on free agency. What are your thoughts on the fact that with a surplus of starting pitching, now that you got JV to anchor the top half of the rotation, with which you would assume a healthy Lance McCullers, and you have so many young pitchers, and then you got Odorizzi kind of dangling in the wind as well with 1 year left. Could you see them moving a starting pitcher or maybe two, Odorizzi first, but could you even see them considering moving one of the young pitchers if it meant bringing back an extra bat position player or another area of need they might have?
Well, if you're going to move one of the young guys, you're going to have to get a King's ransom in return. You're going to have to get, you know, a big payday coming back, whether it's in prospects or a big bat or whatever it may be. I feel like, you know, Jake Odorizzi, you know, he's a valuable pitcher. You know, this is not a guy that they're just going to give away, because as soon as you think you have enough pitching, then you find out you don't have enough pitching. So you got to make sure that you're getting the right package in return. And I don't think that the Astros, even with the surplus that they have in starting pitching, you also know there's several of those guys that can be in relief, at least for a short period of time. So, you know, I think that they're in a good spot right now. I think that there's still going to be some moves eventually whenever the signing ban is dropped and they can get back to free agency. I think they're obviously going to have to do some work in the bullpen again. But I think the rotation, unless they get a really good haul in return, I think you keep all those guys. I really do, because you're just in the situation that's going to be possibly the strong suit of the team is going to be that rotation. And, you know, you're going to need, with the lack of innings that come out of rotations now, you know, you're going to need 7-8 guys to get through 162-game season.
Mike Stanton, Astros TV analyst, joining us. You went to the bullpen. That's where I wanted to take it as well. Graveman gone. Hector Neris, the offseason acquisition for the Astros. Click also mentioned during the introduction of Neris the other day that they still expect Baez and Montero to be pieces that they can count on in the bullpen this season. There's been some conversation if the Astros are done in the bullpen. It sounds like you think they still might add an arm or two. And what do you make of the makeup of the bullpen as it stands right now?
You know, I think it's okay. I do. I think that you can always have a better bullpen. They've got some good arms down there. But, again, in this day and age where, you know, you get a pitcher that throws 200 innings, he's a workhorse, and you go back 25 years ago, and that's an average season. So, you know, you used to look at building a rotation. You wanted to get a minimum of 800 innings. Heck, I think there's some good teams out there that it's a maximum of 800 innings. So, you know, you still have, you know, 9 innings on every single night. You still have all those innings you have to cover. So you're going to need as many arms as you can possibly. And, you know, I know we had several pitchers have very good seasons, but, you know, they're still young guys. They're still, you know, Verlander, you don't know what his innings limit is going to be. You know, I would be shocked if he's able to run out there for 200 innings. I would be shocked if they want him to go out there for 200 innings. And, you know, Fromber obviously is a guy that can throw a lot of innings. They have a couple other guys. Luis Garcia should be able to increase his inning total. But, you know, there's still going to be plenty of innings for the relievers that they're going to have to cover. And so I don't think you can ever say you're absolutely, you know, I'm completely 100% sold on what any bullpen could do. So you're always going to be looking at adding more arms, you know, to close out games.
Mike, I want to say first and foremost, in your honor, we both are holding baseballs right now on set to make sure that we give you the due of what you do on the television. And then I wanted to ask you, just hypothetically, if the Astros don't sign Carlos Gray, and you kind of alluded to a little of this earlier, but what do you see as their potential avenue to replace him? Would it be going to Pena right away and just taking your chances? We've also kicked around whether you move Bregman over there, but he would probably have to lighten up, or Aledmys Diaz, who's played it before, to slide him over. What do you see them doing to kind of put a Band-Aid on it or solve the problem if he does walk?
You know, that's a good question, because my personal opinion is I don't want to move Bregman. You know, Bregman is a Gold Glove caliber third baseman. He's one of the best third basemen in the game. I know he's a natural shortstop, but he has shown to me, even though he's played all those years as an amateur and in the minor leagues at shortstop, he has shown me that he is at his best at third base. So I don't want to reduce the defense at two positions by moving Bregman off third. What they do if they don't sign Correa, that's a good question. And that's why you have to have those other contingency plans, maybe even two or three or four of them, to try and figure out exactly how you're going to cover that position on a daily basis. You know, is it going to be a young guy? I doubt it. There are some other, you know, defensive guys still out there on the free agent market, but I would think with all the other guys, my personal opinion, I wanted them to go after Marcus Semien. Now, I was shocked that Semien was able to get 7 years.
Mm-hmm. You're not alone.
At being 31 years old, because I was expecting, you know, 4 or maybe 5, and I thought that would be a good contingency plan. But, you know, with the CBA coming up here, you know, at December 1st, last night at midnight, he was able to, you know, good for him. He was able to get 7 years. That was, like I said, was a little surprising. But I thought that was a good name for them to go after. So, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I know that James Click and the rest of the guys there, they do have other plans in motion. Of course, they're put on hold now. But if you don't sign Carlos Correa, this should be a competitive team. A very competitive team, a team to win the West yet again next year. And that's going to be hard to do if you don't have a bona fide big league shortstop on a daily basis at that position.
Mike, I have to ask you one more before we let you go. You pitched in 1,178 games in your career. You started one. What's the story behind that one?
Okay, that happened in, I think, 1999.
That's right.
And I was with the Yankees, and pitcher came in. He was actually a spot starter, and he ended up being sick. And so there was a coin toss between myself and Jason Grimsley. Now, you know, Jason had started years ago. in his career, but hadn't started recently. Now, I don't know if I won or lost that coin toss, but I got the start. And I end up finding out about, I don't know, maybe an hour, hour and a half before game time. And I was actually talking to a couple of the reporters, and this is how I found out. Mel Stottlemyre comes up, and he goes, "You guys can't talk to him. He's our starting pitcher today." That's how I found out. Now, the rest of the story was, Mel goes, "Well, when do you want to start?" You know, trying to, you know, do the whole, you know, the starting pitchers usually have a long routine. Well, you know, I could basically roll out of bed and start pitching. He goes, "It's a 1:05 start, so when do you want to start warming up?" I said, 12:57. And he goes, "Well, hold on. We still have the national anthem." Okay, 12:55. And I did my regular warm up in the bullpen. I ended up going four innings, and we won the baseball game. And actually, Grimsley ended up getting the win. Huh. I went four shutout. He gave up one run over the next four, and then Mariano pitched the ninth for the save. But yeah, so that was when Ramiro Mendoza was the starting pitcher that came in sick. And then they flipped the coin between Jason and myself.
Hey, vultured your win, four shutout innings. Great, great outing in 99 and great outing with us, Mike. Enjoyed the conversation. Hope
Thanks,
to catch
Mike.
Up again soon.
Anytime, gentlemen. Hopefully this is short-lived. Everyone have a happy and safe holidays out there. Merry Christmas. And hopefully we get back to baseball here very soon.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better myself. Mike Stanton, Houston Astros TV analyst and longtime
Especially
big leaguer.
If there are any names in there.
And one-time starter of a game for the New York Yankees.
Have you ever had a conversation with Pete Rose?
No.
I'm just asking. Like,
have you ever talked to Babe Ruth?
In a broadcasting – no, actually, Pete Rose has been in studio. We broadcasted live. We've had him on multiple shows on this station.
I guess that's fair.
We've broadcasted live from the Pete Rose golf tournament. And the reason why I bring that up and ask that question is Pete Rose's memory is like a steel trap. And it sounds like Stanton is similar. Mm-hmm. When you talk to Pete Rose, like – and I remember Sean Salisbury and myself and other people were bringing up different things they remembered about him. And he would suddenly take that and go, "Well, you know, he threw me two balls to start the at bat." And then this was like in 1976. He's like, "You know, his first two times he started me with two outside pitches that I wasn't going to change." And it was like to the detail of every pitch until this happened and how many he fouled off and what he did. And I just said to Sean, I go, "Oh, my God, that's impressive." And it sounds like guys when they play, there's certain guys that just don't forget it.
One thing he said about the shortstop position that I want to talk about when we get back. Also, what's the market for Carlos Correa? A few tweets yesterday that might hint at what they could be when the signing freeze is done. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
Hi, this is Jeff Bagwell. I love the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5.
Jeff Bagwell, fan of the Killer Bees. Bagwell, Biggio, Brown, and Blank. Mount Rushmore of Houston. How about that, Charlie Polillo?
Biggio
Mount Rushmore,
would like to
Killer
have a
Bees.
Word.
I said Biggio. I said Bagwell, Biggio, Blank,
Berkman
Brown.
Would like to have a word.
Yeah, he's okay. He's a baseball coach over at HBU. He won't
he's
mind.
He's okay. You want him to come on the show sometime? He's better than okay. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
One of the best switch hitters of our generation.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to push back a whole lot at that. One thing that Stanton said about the shortstop position that kind of surprised me a little bit, he said that the unwillingness that he doesn't feel like the Astros would go young at that position. See, I feel like Jeremy Pena, he might be the favorite in the clubhouse to be the opening day shortstop for this team next year.
You feel that way?
Like, it's either him. To me, it's either him or Aledmys Diaz.
You feel that way?
Yeah, I do. Okay. Who do you think is the leading favorite to be the shortstop for the Houston Astros on opening day, whenever opening day could be? Some people are saying this signing freeze could go all the way out into the summer.
I think that they really are fond of Pena. I've heard from people I've talked to, they're leaning Pena, but that they're not closing the door to, much like Mike Stanton said, not the big, sexy splash shortstop, but more of a guy that at least is going to help you stay at the top of the league defensively, maybe give you a decent bat. And that's how I was explaining it to some of the guys this morning. Was, look, the bottom of your order last year was your big weak spot, right? We knew Maldonado wasn't going to hit, and for most of the season, the center field position didn't hit. But Correa did. what you lose in a shortstop that doesn't hit the way Correa does can be compensated for if you get another outfielder that can play center field, at least while we know that Myers is going to be out. From what I'm hearing, Siri, with just getting his feet wet, has got a bit of an attitude right now.
He's not very good either.
And Chaz is not an everyday center fielder. So whether they go out and get another outfielder or specifically a center fielder, if they can hit, then I think that you're compensating for what you lose offensively from Correa. As long as you get a guy that can field and is good with the glove, there's another way that this lineup can stay as good as they were a year ago.
You want an alternative to Correa sure. that I absolutely hate? No. Buster Olney was on with the Wheelhouse yesterday and said an alternative that I absolutely hate. That's how much I hated it.
I believe he's silent.
That's how much
I think that he is absolutely a viable alternative for the Astros, potentially. If Correa, sits on a high number and wants big dollars, Trevor Story would be a really nice fit. Among the guys, the elite shortstops, he's viewed as arguably the best athlete, and I'm including, Seager and Simeon and Correa, Javi Baez and those. Story is a phenomenal athlete. He certainly has had success with the Rockies. And I just feel like that there's enough of a need and a desire at that position, whether it's the Astros or whether it's the Yankees, taking a look at their payroll and saying, look, we might not be able to fit in a $30 million a year player, which is what Correa wants, but maybe we can work out a Story. And I suspect that he would get a nine-figure offer from some team, one of these teams. Maybe that would be the Astros.
$100 million for a shortstop who, away from Coors Field over the course of his career, has hit .241 with a .752 OPS. If you're spending nine figures on that dude, I might call for James Click's head.
I mean, and that's why you do what you do, because I'll make sure you do, and then I'll make sure you pay for it. But along the way, who'd have thought that at the start of all of this, Story might be the guy left holding the bag, hoping for the best deal of the availables that he could possibly scrounge out, right? I thought it would be Baez. I thought it would be, with the shortstop market and with all these guys being picked up, I thought he'd be one of the top two or three. We heard the Rangers early on were all about him. And now when you look at it, I thought he'd have been off the board before we hit the deadline, well before I thought Baez would be.
Maybe he's asking for too much. Maybe he's asking for nine figures, and everybody's like, dude, have you seen what you do outside of Coors? Also, the athlete comment kind of like caught me off guard too. Like, whenever you're signing a big time free agent that you want to come in, let's talk about just offense. Let's put the pitchers aside, because we all know pitchers aren't athletes, right? What position did you play in college?
Pitcher.
I couldn't remember. Yeah. But anyways, you talk about offensive players that you're looking for in free agency. How often do you talk about their athleticism? Like, it's baseball. Like, you don't really great if they're an athlete. That's outstanding. But athleticism doesn't always translate to like 40 home runs and a .300 batting average and an .850 OPS. Like, the fact that one of the best attributes for Trevor Story is athleticism? No thanks.
Okay, but here's the other thing. And we've seen this before too. Everybody thinks when Correa walks in the room that he's like Adonis. He's like the way he's built.
They're not wrong.
Okay, but his numbers don't lead up to showing you that like he's all of that in a bag of chips either. He's had his moments, no doubt. And there's a reason why he's going to get paid what he's going to get paid. But when you start, talking about looks can be deceiving, then that factors in. I get that. But I think that's why you don't have to go that route. I would almost rather see them go the traditional route, that shortstops, for the most part, are somewhat light hitting. But as long as they can play defense, you can get by. And that's why I think that they may be better suited if they do, God forbid, lose Correa, that they work out someone that can play the middle infield position very well, defend and have a good glove, maybe give you some decent at-bats and a so-so average. But if you get a better outfielder and you're better up the middle in the outfield as well, maybe you can compensate. I don't know. I don't like Trevor Story either. I don't like him for a long term. I don't like him as the alternative to Carlos Correa. And I don't like the fact that they would think that way. If they don't spend the big money on Correa, then they should use that money, those resources and other options elsewhere to kind of just strengthen the rest of the team and just find someone that can defend.
Houston, how would you feel with nine figures on Trevor Story? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Texans get Carson Wentz on Sunday. Is there a lesson that the Texans can learn from the Carson Wentz-Indianapolis Colts relationship? We'll do it next. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation. Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Turn down for what?
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Texans, Colts, Sunday. Massive game. I mean, it's got huge implications. It really does. The Colts are in the mix of being a wild card team in the AFC, and the Texans are embracing the suck. They're very much in the race for a top three draft pick. It's funny where both sides actually want the same result. Colts win. Texans would love that too. What do you think of Carson Wentz, quarterback for the Colts?
What do I think? What?
Of Carson Wentz, the quarterback for the Colts.
Could I not have been any clearer? No, I didn't understand. Look, it's like you with names. Sometimes I just don't understand. You said it kind of fast. I want to make sure I heard the question correctly. Look, I think that he's exceeded my expectations because I didn't know what to expect coming off of just being basically thrown out with the trash in Philly and being crapped on the way out, to the fact that coming off a major injury where he was never the same anyway, and then wondering like even what's between his ears and how much toughness he had and how much desire he really had to want to continue to play the game, there were a ton of question marks coming in, and the only positive you could say is, well, he's playing for his old coach that ran the system where he played his best, so you give it at least a chance. Having gotten to this point in the season to evaluate him, I'd say he's exceeded almost all expectations. Sure, he still has to work on taking the care of the football a little bit, but look, to have the Colts in this position to be doing what they're doing and have him not be the reason why they're not doing more and also being a reason why they've had some of the success they've had, I give the Colts a lot of credit. They've been in almost every game. They should have beaten the Buccaneers. He's made a lot of good throws this year. He doesn't have a strong arm. But again, I hate, you know, and a lot of people hate the term game manager. And I hate to say that that's where it's gotten for him, but he's not the running, you know, gritty quarterback he was in Philly, but he doesn't have to be. And he's also got a stud running back he can hand it off to, and he's got some good receivers, and he's got a great offensive line. You know, with Quentin Nelson, you're always going to be okay. So I think that the Colts should be a playoff team. I thought at the start of the year they had everything but a quarterback. The fact he's playing the way he is, I'm just a little surprised their record isn't better.
Yeah, he got off to a slow start. Yep. Like, it was almost like he was shaking off the rust, relearning the Reich system a little bit. But he's been playing much better, although he did turn it over twice in the second half of the Tampa Bay game, in which they led by 10, in which they should have been running the football, and they weren't. I'm kind of with you with Wentz. Like, he's not back to the Carson Wentz MVP type of player that he was early in his Philadelphia career, where he was going to win an MVP the Super Bowl year, but he got hurt. He's not to that point, but he's way better than he's been in Philly the last couple of seasons. Rick Venturi, former Colts coach, broadcaster as well. He was on the bench earlier, and he talked about what Carson Wentz has brought to the Colts.
Well, to me, it is not. I mean, to me, this is a kid that has played, you know, almost nearly like he played in 2017. This is not the Carson Wentz of 2020, which made this, which makes that problematic. You know, he's 12th in the league in QBR. He's thrown the long ball. He's escaped. He's beloved by his teammates. Very, very smart at the line of scrimmage. Honest to God, the Colts are fourth in scoring, you know, 11th total. I mean, that really isn't a problem. And really, the touchdown turnover ratio is way down. I know the turnovers bit him. It really bit him Sunday. But overall, he's protected the football.
Rick Venturi thinks higher of Wentz than we do. He's there, an indie broadcaster there. I've never heard somebody refer to years as 217, 220.
I haven't either.
Like, that was a first, right? I'm not the only one that thinks that, right? Like, I've never heard. Like, are we in the year 221?
I heard Adele in the interview today use the word process.
Dude, you've been talking about Adele all
day. That's the first
day.
Time I've heard anyone other than BK use the term pronunciation process.
You've told me about Adele earlier today at 11:45.
Off the air.
And here we are at 2:36 with mentions all throughout of Adele. You've been talking about Adele day.
No, I haven't. And I haven't talked about it during the show once. You just brought it up. But I will say, I only brought it up because you were saying you have never heard anybody refer to years.
I haven't.
Until he did that. I had never heard anybody on the planet other than BK refer to it as a process.
Adele
until
did?
And Adele did.
She's starting a residency at Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, she's going to get paid a lot of money. I wonder if Rich Paul's going to make her deals, too.
Maybe so. My wife told me last night, it's funny that you were talking about Adele today, because my wife told me yesterday about Adele, that she was starting a residency at Caesar's Palace, and she wants to go. And I was like, okay.
Good luck to you. You better get on that lottery, because evidently it's all about a lottery online, and you have to become like an Adele fan, and
I'll
there's
let it
a
die
way to go.
A little bit first.
And then go and get in there.
Adele's moving to Vegas, and the A's are moving to Vegas. Making a little doubleheader. You can make a little day baseball at the A's and the Astros, and Adele at Caesar's Palace later that night. You see how the Colts got Carson Wentz, though, right? They got him via trade. Mm-hmm. They traded a 2021 third, a conditional 2022 second, which is going to be a first because Carson Wentz is going to play in enough games for that to turn into the first rounder. You look around the NFL as well. Matt Stafford went to L.A., right? They traded for him. Sam Darnold, maybe not to the level of Carson Wentz and Stafford, somebody that Carolina traded for with the hope that, you know, he could be a quarterback for them that could get them back into the playoffs. You have a lot of former first-rounders, Wentz, Stafford, Darnold, who got traded to other teams. And we talk about the Texans needing a franchise quarterback at some point. You can argue when that point is, the upcoming draft. Do you wait a little bit longer, build the roster, and worry about that in the future? How about going the veteran route? Kind of what the Colts did, kind of what the Rams did, kind of what the Panthers did, where instead of drafting the guy, you go with a little bit more of a known commodity as that quarterback that could
maybe
be your
dude. You got someone in mind because you and I have talked about it. We said that, look, in watching some of the games that happened recently, because we have to pay more attention to them, the national games, because the Texans suck so bad, but we've talked about teams in which the guy that's currently playing quarterback for them might not be their choice, but it could be yours in the short term. From Baker Mayfield to Tyler Heinicke to some of the other guys that have played quarterback in games that we've spoken about recently, I'm fine with that. Look, they have to be fine with that. In the case of like a Heinicke, I think that's a guy that's just happy to be there, that now believes in his heart of hearts he is a starting quarterback, and if Washington somehow deems him as not their guy, he just wants to be where he can be the guy somewhere. And he might be the perfect guy for you, as opposed to Baker Mayfield or some of the other guys that are going to have the ego, the attitude, and the price tag eventually on their mind going, yeah, this is not what I signed up for.
It's a very real possibility that the Texans could go with a former first-round draft pick like these three examples, Wentz, Stafford, Darnold. But it won't be the future franchise quarterback, kind of what Stafford is now for L.A., kind of what Carson Wentz is now for Indy. And the reason that I say that is because what these teams traded for those players. And in all of their situations, in Carolina, you maybe can't say it as seriously as the other two, those are ready-to-win rosters where that last piece was the quarterback that they're hoping can get them deep into the postseason. Carson Wentz is going to end up going for a first and a third to a team who had a turnkey roster ready to get to the playoffs. Matt Stafford, turnkey roster, ready to get to the playoffs. And they also gave up two first and a third and got rid of the contract of Jared Goff for Stafford. So they've been expensive. Sam Darnold went for a second, fourth, and a sixth. So the Texans, who have lots of holes, they definitely don't have a turnkey roster. No way they're giving up draft capital
Throw another name at you? Jimmy Garoppolo.
See, I think Baker Mayfield.
But you still got to pay him a lot.
Jimmy's
already going to have enough money in his pocket that he knows he's the odd man out in San Francisco. It's a matter of time. Where once he gets all the money and there's no other opportunities to be a starter, would he come here to say, I can still play?
I think it's plausible, but there's going to be teams in the market for quarterback that would be happy with Jimmy G.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think Washington would take Jimmy G right now. The Saints, with their situation, would take Jimmy G right now. I mean, I believe that there would be a market for Jimmy Garoppolo. And look, my idea of signing, like, I'm not even calling for the Texans to sign Baker Mayfield, but somebody of that like a young quarterback who's, like, in his mid-20s that didn't stay with his former team, where you sign him. I mean, look, you're not looking to spend big money in free agency anyway, so who cares how much you're spending for this quarterback, with the idea of turning his career around and then flipping him. Like, that's what I want. I'm not saying that the quarterback you sign in free agency who is a failure elsewhere is going to come in and be your franchise quarterback for the next decade. I want them to turn their career around and then flip them year two or year three and then get your future quarterback down the road.
See, now, Dick brought up a point on Twitch that you and I talked about the other night with the Seahawks game. The Seahawks very well could be a player for Deshaun Watson, but there's no way Russell Wilson's going to be a player for the Houston Texans. It would have to be a three-team trade, or there would have to be a way to move him to another location, because the one thing that he's been harping on, and plus his salary is outrageous, but you look at it, he's been harping on winning, and they haven't done enough to win. Last thing he wants to do is go from Seattle, where they're not winning enough for him, and go to the Texans. He'd have to go to be moved again to a team where maybe you get more in return, but he'd have to be moved immediately because he's not going to play here. Some of these other guys you're talking about that we're bringing up that we're kicking around, they would love to play here. I even think that Tua, except for recently now because he's had success with the Dolphins, I think Tua would have loved to getting out of Miami and said, I don't care if you're rebuilding, as long as you believe in me, that I want to be a place where I'm not looking over my shoulder. I think that Carolina's missteps with Sam Darnold have led them to believe they're against another veteran. Sam Darnold's a guy, if they turn their back on him in a year, Sam Darnold could be your bridge, but I don't feel nearly as confident in Sam Darnold as I would a Garoppolo, a Baker Mayfield, even a Heinicke. Heinicke looks to me like a guy that was sitting on his couch waiting for the phone to ring that thought he was going to be doing something in the business world, to a guy that, as much as his idol's been Brett Favre, the way he runs around with his gut and grit and determination and the way he makes some throws that you didn't think he could make, he could be. You could do a lot worse.
You're not going to spend the draft capital for a Wentz or a Stafford.
Nope.
But if there's a quarterback out in the market where you feel like you can revitalize his career or where injuries were a problem
before.
You're not going to
pay them out of Russell Wilson.
And I'm not even worried about the money because I don't want the Texans.
But Russell's in the 40s. You're not paying.
I mean, that's outrageous. But I'm not worried about I'm not worried about overpaying a little bit on a quarterback. Exactly. And you're not worried about bringing in a bunch of free agents really isn't a concern right away anyways. But I'm looking for that type of quarterback, a flip project at quarterback.
I think Baker's the guy.
I think so, too. And yeah. Will Cleveland be somebody where they give Baker the money even though he's been injured? I doubt it.
Baker's the guy, but much like the Harden trade that Rockets fans can definitely relate to, Cleveland's draft picks aren't going to be nearly worth what you could get from other teams that are going to be drafting in the top 5 to 10. Cleveland's still going to be a playoff team for the most part. And even if they're not, they're going to be at the bottom half of the draft. So the deal's going to have to involve young players, too, that are currently on their roster that you might see as guys that are going to be around for a while, because Cleveland's draft positioning is going to be really night and day bad compared to what you could get from other squads that are looking for a quarterback.
If the conversation is, do you need to draft that franchise quarterback in 2022? No, you don't need to. But I also don't think somebody like Baker Mayfield is your franchise quarterback. It's more kicking the can down the road. It's more of a flip project, bringing in a guy, letting him showcase who he really is, and then trading him at the deadline or trading him next offseason for, again, commodities. We have to have a forest look with this. This is going to be a 3 to 5 year rebuild.
Jeremy,
you have to get creative with adding draft capital. I think it's a good way to spend cap money on potentially trying to flip it and then adding draft capital in return.
Nothing says I'm with the program and I'm part of the culture like Baker Mayfield.
We'll see what the Woolhousemen, what they think about the idea of perhaps a veteran quarterback with among the likes of Wentz, Stafford, Darnold.
Tiger Aspin's already on site. He's ready to go.
We'll ask them when we return. Also, a Thursday night football game to look forward to tonight that I'm actually really excited about. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What are you guys doing over there?
We're framing the shot for Twitch.
It's like synchronized swimming. We're doing the same motion.
We're framing right now.
All right. Y'all both look beautiful. Y'all both look good. Jake Asman of the Will House joining
us. Tiger to you.
Is that because he was wearing a polo yesterday?
Not
golf
just
course?
The polo. The polo, the hat, and the Thursday blue of Tiger Woods was Jake Asman yesterday. I noticed.
If only we were doing the show on a Sunday, I'd wear my Sunday red.
Red and with black pants.
Yeah, you should have wore your Wednesday Tiger polo, whatever case that might be. So we were kicking around the idea that the next Houston Texans quarterback, maybe it's not somebody that you get in the draft. Do you think the Texans get a quarterback in the draft 2022?
Assuming they have an extra first-round pick from a Watson trade, I think they will take a flyer, so to speak, on someone. I do not expect right now for them to use the second overall pick on a QB, though.
That's my stance, too. If you can acquire another first-round pick or maybe another two first-round picks, then drafting a quarterback in the first round is something I'm okay with. I don't want it to be the Texans' pick.
See, I'm okay with it. But I'm not encouraging it.
Same.
Because we already know that it's not a quarterback-laden draft.
Exactly.
So unless you get the absolute guy that you, is the apple of your eye, that you have seen has to be the only guy in consideration, you have so many other position groups with needs where you have to start replenishing the entire roster. I would, especially if it was still in the first round, assuming it's in the first round and it's in the upper 20, offensive line, defensive back, as long as you get the first or second guy at their draft position, corner, you get the top one or two corner, you get the top two offensive line, one or two offensive linemen, I think you're doing more of your franchise more of a favor than you are taking a flyer.
I agree. I'm also not against the idea that they take the second overall pick or third overall pick, wherever it ends up being. They trade down a couple spots and get an extra one for next
year. That I totally...
They need so much that just more picks, the better, if I'm Nick Caserio.
I want the Texans to get as creative as possible in acquiring draft picks for the next 3 to 5 seasons. Like, we were kicking around the idea just a moment ago, too, like with the idea that Carson Wentz was traded to the Colts for a third conditional second, going to be a first. Stafford went to L.A. for 2 firsts and a third. Darnold, who you know well, they ended up getting a second, fourth, and sixth for Sam Darnold. Like, can the Texans go the veteran route? I don't think it's going to be like the Wentz-Stafford deal, because now you're giving away draft capital whenever you need draft capital. But what if they go out in free agency and like a Baker Mayfield's out on the market or a Jameis Winston's out on the market and they need somewhere to rehabilitate their career? They need to showcase who they are as a player.
It's a glorified Tyrod Taylor move.
Absolutely, but you trade them, right? Yeah. As opposed to Tyrod Taylor still being on this team, or maybe you flip them at the November 2nd trade deadline in 2022, or maybe you sign them to a 3-year deal and you move them in the offseason. Like, the Texans have to find ways to get draft capital. I think it's a way the Texans could go. They could be active in free agency with the mindset, we're going to flip you at some point.
I do think they'll be active at quarterback in free agency, because Tyrod cannot be the quarterback on this team next year. Like, even if they don't end up drafting a quarterback in the first round.
It could be next year, I think.
He's never healthy, though. Like, I'd rather take my chance.
Well, it doesn't
mean
he has to be the only guy, but I think that from the standpoint, they're not going anywhere next year either.
Agreed. But how about, like, Jameis Winston or, like, Taylor
How much
Heineke?
Of an upgrade is that? Heineke, I think, yes.
Well,
but
Winston's
I think
got the upside.
From Jameis coming off another injury and some of his inconsistent play, we didn't really see how consistent he could be. And he was inconsistent as the starter. I think Tyrod is as good a bridge as most of those guys. I would be intrigued by Heineke because he's still young and he still might not have peaked.
But not from a bridge perspective, because you're right that Tyrod could be just as good a bridge as those guys. Yeah. But the idea not to be a bridge, because Tyrod at his very best, even if there's a quarterback.
Is he a trade piece or is he your short-term franchise?
I don't think Tyrod could be your
trade piece.
No, not Tyrod.
I'm talking about another route.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying, like, Jameis Winston versus Tyrod Taylor. Like, who gives you the better chance to win? It's probably remotely the same. Mm-hmm. But Jameis Winston obviously has a more upside potential, former number one draft pick, has led the NFL in passing, has thrown, he's in the 30-30 club, which, how, you know, illustrious was that? Not so illustrious, but we've seen that he can be a very talented player. If the Saints give up on Jameis Winston, I don't hate the idea of signing Jameis Winston, sling the ball around the yard, and then see if it perks the interest of somebody else around the NFL, and then flip them for a second or third round pick. That's how the Texans need to be active in free agency. You're not going to be active in free agency signing a 28-year-old safety that's going to, you know, basically be over the hill in 2 to 3 years. They got to spend that money wisely in terms of bringing back draft capital in the future. That's tough to do, and Caserio's got to get creative in that way.
The draft's the best way to be creative in that way.
That's like, what I think.
You trade Deshaun Watson, you get a bunch of picks. All right, well, what if you take one of those picks that's in the first round in the Watson deal and you trade back again and get even more
picks?
Your pick as well. Like, they need so much. The best thing they could do is to take their picks that they have and trade back and accumulate more picks, because you look at what the Dolphins did with the Tunsil trade. They turned Laramie Tunsil into, like, 4 different first-round picks. Like, that's the type of thinking I would have if I'm Caserio.
That's what I've been harping on, that we don't know if Caserio got anything at all from Bill Belichick yet. The jury's still out. But the one thing you hope he did is his savvy way of handling the draft to add more assets, to strengthen your roster from start to finish. We know the top 2 picks are projected to be defensive ends or pass rushers. You don't want the 3rd best pass rusher when you're drafting as high as you're drafting. So if another team wants that pick because that's the one specific need they got to go get, and it gets you 1, 2, 3 extra picks in this year, and like you said, the next 3 drafts, that's what he's got to keep doing consistently to get this team back on the fast track to get better.
You can do both. But yes, the draft is the easiest way to do that. You're asking Caserio to go outside of the box with, you know, kind of the idea that I have. What worries me about Caserio, like, I don't like the transactions overall that Nick Caserio has made. I'm not a fan of the free agent signings. I don't think he's won a trade to this point. I'll give him credit for the draft picks that he made. Pretty good. Davis Mills, I'll throw that one out. But how about drafting Nico Collins in the 3rd? That one looks pretty good right now. Brevin Jordan in the 5th? That one looks pretty good right now. Roy Lopez in the 6th? That one looks great right now. But the problem that I have with Caserio this past draft was that on 2 separate occasions, he went the opposite way of what we're talking about, where he sent more draft picks to trade up. And I don't think that's a good mindset whenever you have a rebuilding team that has so many holes.
Agreed. He also traded a 5th-round pick for Anthony Miller, who played like 2 games. Then he's like, we'll see you later. You don't fit the Texans culture.
Don't even get me started on Ryan Finley.
You had the same injury that you had that should have been a red flag to not make the trade in the first place, thinking, he's past that. No, he actually wasn't. That's why I said to you all along, I'm very grateful looking back now that Caserio didn't have a 1st or 2nd round pick to deal with, because God knows what he would have done with it. You just hope he's learned some lessons so he doesn't do it again.
The good news is they have all their picks, right? Yeah. They have salary cap flexibility. So, like, I give Nick Caserio an incomplete on this year just because the team is so bad. He had no cap space. He didn't have a first or a second round pick. But the clock starts now with Caserio the second you get to the offseason. The biggest thing is a watch and trade. And then, you know, the draft, the Texans are going to be a major player in this draft, and they have to get it right if they're going to get the franchise back on track.
I'm good with the incomplete grade, too. But it's also fair to kind of pick apart the moves that he has made to this point. And if I give Caserio, look, and I think Caserio is a very smart guy. I love listening to him talk. I listen to him every chance that I get. He's a very smart dude. He's sharp. It worries me that
maybe.
You love
listening to him talk?
Yeah. I love, like, when anytime he's, like, doing press conference or stuff, they post
on soothing voice, you know?
He blows off spare time going to used car lots just to have conversations.
Maybe I said that the wrong way. Okay. He's a very smart football mind, at least in his words that he uses. The actions have been something that I've not been blown away with. What do you guys have coming up on the Wheelhouse?
A lot of football talk today. We're also going to be leading the show with John Granato's call-out to Brad Kellner, BK.
Wait, the king is back?
BK's back. I haven't seen him yet because I came in here, but...
He's playing hurt.
He's apparently back, and let's find out if he has some big-time takes for us after missing a day.
BK, the king, because he's the Burger King.
That's so bad.
Our version of the Woodhead is back today. That's good to know that it's not, like, multiple days missing of the show.
Someone on Twitch yesterday called him Buzzkill Kellner. BK is what it stands for because he missed out on a great event yesterday at the Occasional Invitational.
He did. Good food, too.
He's ultimately extra subliminal. Like, the fact, you heard what he did when he filled in with Granato on the bench,
right? Yeah, that was great.
And John, it took John
had
like,
no idea.
He had to be told before he picked up on it.
Which, is that a credit to BK or a credit to John? Like, I don't know. It could go both ways. Not a credit, but like a discredit to John.
John had no idea. Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, it was a great
trust the process.
Trust the process. Thanks so much, Jake. We'll be listening. Process, tomato, tomato. Cowboys at Saints tonight. I was tempted to play the Saints money line on this. I really was. They're getting 4.5 points. Like, I'm Taysom Hill. I'm a Taysom Hill guy. I think Taysom Hill is going to give him a boost. Hill has a good chance to lead him to victory. I feel Taysom Hill is going to cover the 4.5 points tonight. Bad news, though, no Alvin Kamara and two offensive linemen are out. Let's just look over that. I saw that news after I made the bet, by the way.
Yeah, that's why I wouldn't be doing the bet that you're doing. And the thing is that Charlie made a point that was not on baseball that it caught my ear today. He said that might be the most watched NFL game with interest in the city of Houston this year.
That's fascinating.
And he's right. We got a lot of Saints fans and a lot of Cowboys fans in the marketplace.
It's kind of rude.
There's a lot of people paying attention to that game because they know there's not a lot to look at NRG.
That quote by Charlie's a microcosm of who he is. Like, it kind of
it
annoys you a bit as a Houstonian, but he's absolutely right, which he always is. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Brendan Riley doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Answer that?
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a premium interior paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.